This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. In this hour, we are addressing the quandaries posed when bedrock ethical, moral, and professional principles push up against one another. For another example, consider the city of Detroit, which we're often told is the quintessential crime-ridden post-apocalyptic hellhole.
We travel to Detroit, where residents refuse to abandon a city blighted by unemployment and crime.
A common media narrative in Detroit is praise for the recent influx of brave urban pioneers, with their Restoration Hardware credit cards gentrifying the city back into solvency.
Evan Hansen and a partner purchased an old Midtown Detroit abandoned building and turned it into a restaurant more than a year ago.
Frustrated with both the depressing depictions of blight and stories dominated by the new residents, Mayor Mike Duggan hired a team of storytellers to feature neighborhoods and communities in Detroit that are often overlooked in mainstream media. But wait, aren't we supposed to be suspicious, very suspicious, when the government tells its version of the story? Aaron Foley is the chief storyteller for the city of Detroit, and he says there are always two narratives.
It's either a city on the rise thanks to all the millennials moving from New York, or it's a city on the decline thanks to all of the factories that have been closing since the 1940s. One thing that a lot of people don't understand is just how big Detroit is. It's about 140 square miles. A lot of media attention is focused on downtown, midtown, trendy neighborhoods. But then you have about 133 square miles left where the stories aren't being told. The glue that holds Detroit together, the community organizations, the block clubs, the churches, the rec centers, places that make Detroit, Detroit, don't get the same shine that a new person who has recently moved to Detroit will get. We latch on to whatever's hot.
I'm curious to know what you suppose is going on in newsrooms that leads them to repeat the same tired tropes about the city of Detroit. Is it laziness? Is it disinterest? Latent racism? What's going on?
Maybe a little bit from each bucket. One thing that's definitely hit a lot of our local newsrooms is the decimation of talent through layoffs. You have a lack of institutional knowledge among those who remain. You also see a lot of reporters who may not be as familiar with Detroit as someone who has been born and raised here.
And for what it's worth, your shop, I think you have six people you work with who everyone's a person of color.
Exactly. That was intentional because I wanted people who were plugged into Detroit and I wanted people that looked like Detroit.
All right. I'm looking at a list of some of the stories that you and your fellow storytellers are telling. One is Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, the Foundation of Shakespeare in Detroit, Vacant Banglatown School to be Converted into Affordable Housing. A lot of soul in this hole in the wall in Northwest Detroit. Are you Detroit's best home cook? All right, the Pentagon Papers, it isn't. This is right. Quintessentially soft feature stuff.
I want to fight back against the soft feature stuff a little bit because I wanted to build our audience by first setting ourselves apart. Soul in the Wall, for example, that's a restaurant that will not win a James Beard Award, but they've been in that space, they've served that neighborhood, and they've got some history in that neighborhood. I wanted something where you could see Black people in a city that's 82% Black get the same sort of reverence as your titan businessmen in town.
All right, now, Chief Storyteller, once again, you are a government employee. Can you tell me why yours isn't just a fancy title for propagandist? Are you to be trusted?
I mean, I'll be honest, you know, this is the question I've gotten a lot, being, you know, thought of as a propagandist. It does sort of bother me because I came from a journalism background. You know, it's not me just throwing away my journalism career just to go work for the mayor. It's continuing what I've been doing. You know, I'm trying to make Detroit a cornerstone of what I do because Detroit made me what I am. Now here's an opportunity to just really, for me, take it to the next level, as well as create this platform where Detroiters can be part of something.
That editorial independence, is it a guarantee?
I have the autonomy over this. Like, I'm not going to the mayor or anybody else and saying, hey, can you go over this? And I would hope that, you know, I've sort of built a little bit of a reputation in Detroit. You know, I have two books. I've been a loudmouth.
one of which, by the way, has the magnificent title of How to Live in Detroit Without Being a Jackass.
I built myself up to this position, I like to think. And some of the things that I've done before, I'm doing now, which is raising awareness for Black-owned businesses when nobody else would, telling people, you know, how to conduct themselves in Detroit from a Detroiter standpoint.
I guarantee you, will come a time where some developer is coming to town and is going to invest a lot of money in a neighborhood that really, really needs it. But you're going to discover that someone's being heavy-handed about the development plans, and it is going to have a really bad effect, let's just say, on some low-income neighborhoods. Will you be able to write that story?
We got a lot of people that are like me in the mayor's office where we come from some of these neighborhoods, and we don't want to let our own people down. There's a guy in our planning office who says, if we can't do it, then nobody else can. But you're right. If the situation comes, I'm going to face a challenge.
All right. I want to ask you one more thing. The FBI crime data report places Detroit on a per capita basis as the most violent city in the United States in 2016. It also has the highest housing vacancy rate in the country. A fifth of the homes are empty. So counter-narratives are great, so long as they don't obscure other truths. How do you make sure that you, in your accentuation of the positive, don't obscure other truth?
First of all, I can't change that narrative. That's something everyone is aware of. I sort of push back against this notion that I'm only going to cover positive news. We talked about this phenomenon of Cartier sunglasses. In the late 60s, people in factories were still making all this money on the line, and a status symbol of wealth were these $2,000 plus Cartier glasses that were very hard to come by in Detroit because you had to be a licensed dealer through Cartier to buy them. Well, the factory wages started going down in the 80s, but then it became a status symbol among gangs and drug dealers. We did a quick write-up of it, how people will either kill for them or maim for these very expensive sunglasses, in addition to a video that we filmed on our own about a young woman who had fake Cartier glasses and they were snatched off. And I was like, you know what? This is a thing in Detroit. Let's talk about it on this platform, how this thing happened, and let's talk about why it's a thing.
Aaron, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Aaron Foley is the chief storyteller for the city of Detroit and the author of two books, How to Live in Detroit Without Being a Jackass and The Detroit Neighborhood Guidebook.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.